A Billings-based company wants to buy Community Medical Center in Missoula, but the Attorney General's office wants to hear from the public first. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Christopher Allen. We'll also get Senator John Tester's reaction to the recent Democratic election losses. Two Butte men who were reported missing today in the Highland Mountain southwest of Whitehall were found safe this afternoon. Butte Silver Bow law enforcement officers, along with a search and rescue team, began looking for the men this morning. A friend of the two men spotted them at about 2:45 p.m. Sheriff Ed Lester says the men, ages 61 and 63, were in their truck, which had broken down as they went to recover a downed elk. The men spent the night in the mountains and were trying to fix the truck when they were located. Lester says the men were in good shape. He says researchers were relieved. The National Weather Service has issued a wind chill warning for the area late tonight and into Tuesday. A candidate for Powell County Sheriff lost by 90 votes in a race in which election judges threw out 238 write-in votes. Election officials say many of those votes weren't counted because they only included the candidate's last name. Elections Administrator Diane Gray tells the Missoulian that a statewide directive from Secretary of State Linda McCullough said write-in ballots with just the last name couldn't be counted. Sheriff Scott Howard held onto his post with a 994-904 margin over challenger Gavin Rosellis. Rosellis entered the race in August after losing his job as deputy due to cutbacks. Gray says more than 2,300 ballots were cast and around 1,100 had write-ins for sheriff. Gray says not all write-in voters understood what they needed to do to have their vote count. Anyone opposing, supporting, or just curious about the pending sale of Missoula's Community Hospital will have a chance to weigh in next week. Billings Clinic and Regional Care Hospital Partners are buying the nonprofit medical center for over $67 million. That's if the deal's approved by Montana Attorney General Tim Fox. Spokesman John Barnes says the AG's office isn't legally required to hold public forums on the proposed sale.
However, we decided very early on that it was very important to get public input on this. And so we've done a number of things. We have put up a website where people can come in and give us their comments, and a lot of people have done that. They can send us comments in writing. And we knew that we would probably be holding a public forum, which has been scheduled for next Wednesday, 5:30, in Missoula.
Barnes says the Attorney General can only consider a limited set of elements surrounding the sale of nonprofits. For instance, he says the AG must be assured community's board of directors is acting prudently and in the best interest of the hospital.
That includes, you know, major fiduciary obligations. Also in this transaction, if there are any conflicts of interest, at a number of levels, that's something we will be looking at. We'll be looking at the sale price to make sure that it falls within the range of fair market value. Also, the nonprofit charitable assets, there must be a plan for how those assets are allocated.
Next week's public forum on the proposed sale of Missoula's Community Hospital starts at 5:30, Wednesday, November 19th, at the Hellgate High School Auditorium. Former Montana Supreme Court Justice William Liepart will moderate. Senator John Tester had to cancel a planned event in Missoula today due to the weather, but he made time for a phone interview with Montana Public Radio News Director Eric Whitney.
Senator John Tester, thanks for joining us on Montana Public Radio.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to visit with you, Eric.
There's been an election since the last time we talked. What do you make of the results?
What I make of the results are is that folks weren't happy with Democrats, and they made some changes. That's certainly what elections should be about. If things aren't going the way folks think they should be, there's accountability, and you move forward and try to adjust. I think that there were several messages, though. I think the fact that nationwide two-thirds of the voters stayed home is an indication that neither party is exactly revered. If there was a message that was sent, it was, you guys need to clean up your act, start working together, check your politics at the door, and start passing policies that empower the middle class and this country. I think there's a very much a concern out there, and myself is included in that, that we're starting to lose the edge of being a leader in the world. I don't think we've invested in education or research and development or infrastructure like we should have, and we continue to fight every war that comes down the path. There's a lot of folks out there that are concerned about that.
Some of the speculation here in Montana is that your party didn't have a strong positive message for voters. You know, Republicans said that they were for less government, lower taxes, that they're...
Yeah, I think that's pretty much been the Republicans' message for a generation, and I think it's a message that's worked. I think Democrats did not have a good, solid message that they could go out and talk about, and it was complicated, and quite frankly, we got beat because of it. We need to put more focus on the middle class and leave all the other things off, but I'm a farmer. I'm not a technician when it comes to message. I just look at the issues and try to support the issues that moves Montana and this country forward, and that's what I'll continue to do in the minority. The minority really doesn't scare me. I mean, I've been here before in the state legislature. I think there's opportunities to get things done. It's just finding coalitions you can work with to help put forth policies that really help move the country in a positive direction.
I read a story in Politico a couple days ago that says you're vying to be the chair of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee to lead the charge for Democrats in the 2016 elections. Is that true? And if so, why would you want that job?
I think it's a bit of an overstatement that said I was vying for it. I think that naturally, being just finished my eighth year and 45th in seniority, that they're going to start looking to folks like me. I can tell you that I am intrigued by it because I think that there's an opportunity to get in on leadership meetings and have discussions about the kind of policies we need to be dealing with on the floor of the Senate. On the other side of the equation, I still have my work to do as a U.S. Senator for Montana and for the country, and I think that's very important. I still have some obligations to my farm. I think that's important. So, if it's offered to me, sure, I'm going to consider it, but I think there has to be some soul searching on my part and my wife's part, if we're going to do this. But there's some opportunity to help move the party in different directions, and I would be foolish not to take advantage of that on one hand. On the other hand, it has to work for me personally, too.
So what kind of direction would you take the party, or what makes you think that you'd be particularly well-suited to claw back some wins in 2016 after this very difficult year for your party?
I'm the only working farmer in the Senate. I think that the experience that I have in rural America on the ground, running two real tough elections, is important when you're sitting down in leadership. But I think the big point is this, and I alluded to it earlier, Eric, and that is that our focus and policies need to be on the middle class. We have had a vibrant middle class that's been the envy of the world, and we're losing that. We're having folks fall into poverty, and we're having folks at the top end becoming incredibly rich. And there's nothing wrong with that if you can keep your middle class. But the truth is, our middle class is in decline, and we need to do some things to help reinvigorate it. That's where I would push the caucus.
You mentioned, of course, that you're now a member of the minority party in the Senate, and I wonder what that means specifically for the bill you've been championing for years now, the Forest Jobs and Recreation Act. What do you think the future of that bill is in the new Republican-led Senate?
We haven't been able to get that bill through the Senate when we were in the majority, so it's not like we've got a great track record. We got it through committee. It's a great bill, but it's been a tough haul to get everybody educated on the bill. We're going to continue to educate, and I'm going to work with anybody who'll work with me, just as it was before when I was in the majority, to try to get this bill across. Is it going to be easy? If it would have been easy, it'd be done by now. But it's still a very, very good bill that I think works well for Montana and could work well for the West.
My understanding of the bill's basics are that it establishes these stewardship contracts that, I guess in simple terms, trade a certain level of timber cut in exchange for some restoration of some wild areas and some designated protection for some new wilderness areas. Do you think that those stewardship contracts have a future, or do you think the Republican-led Senate is more likely just to focus on getting the cut out without necessarily the balance on the other side to wilderness protection?
That's always the fight. The fight is, where do you hit the balance? That's an opportunity for jobs on both ends of the spectrum, through recreational opportunities and through timber. And that's what this bill was meant to do. It was meant to save our timber infrastructure and give folks some wild places they can get away from it all. This is a very well thought out bill that was constructed by Montanans for Montana's forests. And I think that it should not be political in nature.
Tomorrow, of course, is Veterans Day, and you do a lot of work on behalf of veterans. What's your sense of what kind of progress is being made on the VA?
I think progress is being made. I think Secretary McDonald is a good man, and I think he's doing his level best to move the ball on veterans' issues. Look, a little bit earlier I talked about what's going on in the Middle East and what has been going on in the Middle East for the last 10 or 12 years. And I think the issues with the VA are real, and I think it's going to cost money to hire the people and get the facilities for those people to work in to meet the needs in the VA. That's why I'm very skeptical when we talk about spending a bunch more money in the Middle East, getting a bunch more people hurt, dropping a bunch more bombs. These all have long-term impacts, and the long-term impacts of the war in the Middle East that we've been dealing with are going to cost this country for a long time to come, and they're not cheap. Post-traumatic stress disorder is real, and it costs a lot of money for a long time to treat these folks. I think McDonald's doing the right thing. I think there's some problems with middle management that he's working on right now. But the bottom line is, if we're going to meet the needs of all these veterans coming back and the veterans that we haven't taken care of from previous conflicts like Vietnam, it's going to take manpower and it's going to take facilities, and that's expensive.
On Sunday, President Obama announced that he's doubling the number of American troops or advisors being sent to Iraq to deal with this Middle East crisis. Sounds like you're not on board with that decision.
There's questions that need to be answered, and I'm not going to be too critical until I give them the opportunity to answer the questions. They didn't answer them in September when I was back there. And I would just say this. It is a threat to our national security, but it's also a threat to every other country's national security in this world. And for us to pay the bills and not expect the other countries to step up, then I think we're making a mistake. And I think it's going to break this country over the long haul. Those folks out there in the other countries, the European countries, the Middle Eastern countries, China, South American countries like Brazil, India, they need to pay their fair share, and we'll pay our fair share. But we shouldn't be paying the bulk of this effort, both in manpower and in money. We're not the only ones that are impacted by them, and as long as we continue to pay the bills, they're going to say, go ahead and pay the bill. We'll watch you guys drive yourself into debt oblivion, and we're not going to pitch in anything. And I think that's a huge mistake, and I think we need to force it. Now, they may be paying up. I've got to get the information, but I certainly have a feeling that we may be doing the bulk of this on our own, and I think that's a mistake.
Senator Tester, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thanks, Eric.
Images matter, and the images girls see can affect the career choices they make as young women. That was one of the issues discussed at a conference in Helena Thursday that brought together a diverse group of people who would like to see more young women choose careers in engineering or technology. Montana Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Steve Jess has the story.
Imagine a scientist at work in a laboratory. Did you imagine a man or a woman wearing the white lab coat? Psychology professor Jesse Smith says the image of the typical male scientist is also a big part of the reason more women don't go into careers in science or technology.
If what you think about when you close your eyes and think, what's a scientist, and you come up with a white man, you're statistically correct. That's right. And so it perpetuates the cycle. And so it becomes a very difficult cycle to break.
Smith, who teaches at Montana State University, was a keynote speaker at the conference sponsored by the Montana Girls STEM Collaborative, a group searching for ways to attract more women and girls into fields related to science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM for short. She says most people don't consciously discourage girls from taking math or science classes or pursuing careers in engineering or technology. But images that most of us take for granted can send a powerful message.
People conjure up a white man, older, crazy hair, glasses, lab coat, and that does not appeal to really anybody, let alone young women. That's the knee-jerk reaction, and we've done research showing if you ask people just to draw a scientist, that's what they draw. And so we have to actively fight against that, and it can absolutely be done, but it takes a conscious effort.
Smith describes an experiment in which young women were ushered into two separate rooms and given a survey about their career choices. In one room, they were surrounded by images depicting male scientists at work. In the other, all the images were gender neutral. The women in the room without pictures of male scientists all around them were more likely to express an openness to careers in science and technology.
The women sitting in the identical building in the room next door felt more at home than those who were in the Star Trek-y, gizmo-y, all disorganized room. And so it seems so ridiculous that something like the portraits matter and the look matters, but it really does.
She says both men and women use stereotypical images and language that associate science or technology with men. It's not the fault of one gender or the other. Counteracting this tendency, she says, involves more than just adopting gender-neutral language. It means actively reaching out to girls and young women to tell them that science is exciting, that technology and engineering are careers with a bright future, and that they are welcome to pursue them.
I think there was a time that we thought we shouldn't give special favors to women. That's going to undermine the whole cause. And I think we've moved past that to saying, actually, having an open discussion about these topics among our employees and our staff, our students, is exactly the way that we can figure out and work together to solve this.
The conference, sponsored by the Montana Girls STEM Collaborative, brought together educators and representatives from some of Montana's tech-related businesses to explore mentoring programs and ways of projecting women as role models in technological fields. The collaborative is also sponsoring mini-grants for a variety of projects, from computer coding boot camps to an astronomy after-school club in Bozeman. More information about the Montana Girls STEM Collaborative is on our website, mtpr.org. Reporting from Helena, I'm Steve Jess, Montana Public Radio.
And now the weather forecast for our listening area. West of the Divide, there's a wind chill warning in effect from 11 p.m. tonight to noon Wednesday for most of the region. Wind chill will drop temperatures to 10 to 20 degrees below zero for Tuesday and 15 to 35 degrees below zero on Wednesday. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers, lows 1 below to 6 above zero. Tuesday, partly cloudy with a slight chance of snow, high 7 to 14 degrees. For central and southwest Montana tonight, there's a wind chill advisory in effect from midnight tonight to noon Tuesday. Winds will drive temperatures down to between 5 and 15 degrees below zero on Tuesday and 10 to 20 degrees below zero on Wednesday. Tonight, windy with areas of blowing snow throughout the night, lows 5 below to 5 degrees above zero. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a chance of snow, highs 0 to 10 degrees. And now here's Pat Rosenleaf with an editorial commentary.
For the past 9 months now, I've had this perfectly nice little gig. Once a month, I got to tape a 5-minute segment of my own thoughts on any subject I chose. Once recorded, the piece would air over Montana Public Radio, usually on Wednesday nights during the 5:30 news. The job didn't pay anything, nor should it. After all, I was expressing my own opinion and receiving the honor of having those thoughts broadcast to whoever might be listening. I did a segment on losing my dear husband, one on the sexification of our daughters, a couple on public education, and two others on the 2014 election. In all, mine was a liberal voice. Some people would have agreed with me, others not so much. The spectrum of commentators was wide. I don't think any one side of the political spectrum was favored over the other. In September, Montana Public Radio hired a new boss who, from the beginning, just wasn't so keen on these commentaries. He told me he thought, quote, people just bored out after 3 minutes, end quote. I thought and said that he didn't have much faith in the Montana Public Radio typical listener, but he maintained his opinion. Anyway, after taping a particularly hard-driving commentary on Steve Daines and Ryan Zinke, which I had entitled, thanks to two commenters from the August piece, Calling Out the Weasels, my new boss said that the Daines people had called and demanded equal time based on that piece I'd done the month before on Daines alone. They believed I was a, quote, political operative, using public radio as a forum for my opinions. I laughed. I've been retired from the teaching field for over 10 years, and I got a picture of myself sneaking around in a long, dark trench coat, ferreting out state secrets. Nothing I wrote in the second piece was a secret, although some information came from an anonymous blog, which has been called one of the best political blogs in America, the Montana Cowgirl. The rest was a matter of public record, mostly gleaned from news stories and one not anonymous blogger from Helena, whose information I find straightforward and honestly presented. I was also told that I had referred to the men as liars and that such wordage was not appropriate for public radio. Well, I say if you lie, that makes you a liar, but then I always was one to call a spade a shovel. I took my comeuppance and said I'd rewrite the piece, toning it down, losing the anonymous blogger, and dispensing with the word liar. This I did, and emailed the new boss the piece. He okayed and agreed to tape it. But came the day for my taping, I received no call, even though I emailed both him and my producer, who ordinarily taped the segments. Weeks passed. One day I received an email of apology. My comments had been sent to the junk mailbox by mistake and had been lost in space. Would I care to tape now? My new boss asked. As a matter of fact, I was ready right then. I taped it and it ran on a Monday night during the 5:30 news. Today I received an email from the new guy apprising me of the decision to drop all commentaries from Montana Public Radio. It was a, quote, difficult decision and one not made lightly, end quote. I was invited to put my commentaries on the Montana Public Radio website, but, quote, producing, reviewing, and vetting commentaries and ensuring a balance, end quote, required an awful lot of time, which he felt would be better spent on, quote, reporting and generating news unavailable elsewhere, end quote. I was also invited to do one more commentary, and this is it. Ironically, I think it will run closer to the 3 minutes the new boss wanted, but there's not much more to say. I'm sorry to lose this opportunity. I kind of inherited it from Mary Moe, a friend and the new state senator to District 21 from Great Falls. I also hate to lose this opportunity because I think that civil discourse and the discussing of ideas and ideologies is on the wane. Instead, we prefer to snipe from our various corners, at times blaming the poor for being poor, the rich for being so damned rich, the politicians, other religions, other nations, illegal aliens for coming to this country, when it's patently obvious that were any one of us in their positions, we'd be fighting like hell to get to America, where our families might possibly have a chance to thrive instead of being killed in the streets by gangs or drug lords or the military. There's no end to the blame we can lay, but there are a few like Montana Public Radio listeners who are willing to consider all sides and make a decision based on their hearts and their minds. Farewell to you. This is Pat Rosenleaf, who has thoroughly enjoyed these past few months with you.
I'm Eric Whitney, news director at Montana Public Radio. Tomorrow at this time, I'll explain my decision to discontinue commentaries.
Pat Rosenleaf is one of many commentators on Montana Evening Edition. Their opinions don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can post it on our website. I'm Christopher Allen. Please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.